Greetings once again. McBurney here. And you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, I'm welcoming you back, as I often do, for the weekly Worldview, another week. As we look ahead, I know it's a little late. We had to take yesterday off. Well, it's not that I don't care about you people or my extremely attractive audio engineer. I care about all you people. But I had the opportunity yesterday, myself and the kids, to meet Walt Brown, author of In the Beginning, which is, it's all about everything having to do with Genesis, physics, science, mathematics, chemistry. Just phenomenal. A phenomenal book. And I've wanted to meet Walt Brown probably for better part of 10 years. Had the opportunity yesterday to take a meal with him, meet with him and my pastor, Bob, and brought my girls down. And they all got to meet Walt and Peggy. So it took a longer time than I would have thought. I was not able to give proper attention to the program. And if you know me, you know that I like to give proper attention when it is required. And so tonight, I come to you completely focused like a laser, ready to talk about the news of the day. I'm not that interested in the news of the day. We'll do some of that. But the conversation over theories and just exploring what we think might have occurred, what Walt thinks, Bob thinks, what I think, some of the other guys there, Tommy and RC and Larry. I mean, it's just so fascinating to sit around and talk about the living God and the creation experience. It's just truly amazing that we have the opportunity to do that. And we can sit in public in a restaurant and talk about that. Nobody comes and threatens to cut our head off, burn our house down, or sell our women into slavery. So God bless America, and God bless the United States Marine Corps. And I believe, Walt was a colonel. Airborne. So God bless the United States Army. And I just thank God for the opportunity yesterday. And I can't get into some of the stuff we talked about because it's secret. And then some of my theories are kind of embarrassing. So I don't want to let those go publicly until they've been confirmed or denied by higher headquarters. But for now, we're going to move. Are we going to move? Yeah, well, we'll move into the news of the day. I got a report here out of Chicago. Okay, so I'm doing the broadcast today, having eaten a full meal, a full dinner, prepared by my extremely attractive audio engineer. It was delicious. Grilled steak, potatoes, corn on the cob, cucumbers, tomatoes from the garden. But normally when I do the show, I make sure that I'm on an empty stomach so that all the blood can pool in my brain housing group. But right now, not only am I feeling rather bloated, but also all the blood is working furiously down in the gastrointestinal tract. And so I may become lightheaded and I may lose my train of thought at some point during the show. And if I do, I hope you'll forgive me. But boy, was it good. I never do this either. So this will be an experiment. If the show's better this time, maybe I'll eat a big meal before every show. Well, you live and learn. You try new things, you know. So, but we're going to go to Chicago. A report from CBS there. A 34-year-old woman died last Thursday after falling masonry hit her on the head outside of a church in the South Loop neighborhood there in Chicago. Apparently, part of a gargoyle statue struck the woman in the head after it fell from the Second Presbyterian Church of Chicago. Killed was one Sarah Bean of Chicago. She was a mother of two. It's very sad. What's the deal with the hideous monstrosities and the gargoyles on churches? Is there some cultural thing that I'm missing, that I'm not aware of, that we need to put demons on the church? I don't get it. And you're just asking for something like this to happen. You got these churches that are 100 years old sitting there in Chicago. It's raining, it's cold, it's windy, and winter and summer, the change of the seasons. Eventually, the gargoyle is going to fall apart, and you're going to get somebody killed for crying out loud. I'm not for gargoyles on churches. I just don't understand it. And I did that story just so I could express my distaste with the idea of putting demons on the church. I don't get it. And if you know what it is, maybe you could send me an email. You could say, hey, Doug, you're culturally insensitive. Don't you realize that this means this and that, yada, yada. I don't get it. I don't support it. And if I ever have a church, I will not put demons on it. All right. Now, meanwhile, speaking of demons, we're going to go right into the bad religion file. And we go to Detroit for some bad religion this week. The Satanic Temple has opened its first chapter outside of New York City. And they're going to open a chapter there in Detroit. So they're bringing Satan to Detroit. That's the one thing Detroit needs, is more of Satan. Well, you know, now that they have the bombed out look, you know, it already looks like hell. So now the satanic temple. So they're going to open a branch there. They say they don't actually worship Satan, though. Yes, they say they're tenets. T-E-N-E-T-S. It's tenets. Just so you know, it's not tenants like people who rent. It's tenets, meaning your foundational or fundamental beliefs. Their tenets there at the Satanic Temple include free will, compassion toward all creatures, respect of others' freedom, and beliefs supported by scientific understanding. That's what they say they actually worship. And they claim they take care never to distort scientific facts to fit their beliefs there at the Satanic Temple. Apparently, Satan is just a metaphorical figure. And they know that that upsets Christians and other normal people to say they're Satanists, so that's why they do it. They want other people to look at them and pay attention to them, but they're upset that the NSA has access to their iPhone and their email, do the Satanists. The temple's plans there in Michigan include offering same-sex wedding ceremonies. Okay, hold on a second here. compassion for all creatures, respect for others, freedom, and they never distort the facts to fit their beliefs. So they're going to let people get married who are homosexuals. Well, that's twisting the facts to fit your beliefs. I mean, a fact's a fact. You know, you put two homos in a pile somewhere and come back 50 years later and their entire civilization is gone. It's done. But anyways, I don't want to criticize anyone's beliefs. Far be it for me to ever do that. Let's see. So they're going to offer same-sex homosexual marriage weddings there. They're going to advocate for women's rights, which I suppose that's fine. And they're going to oppose on religious grounds the informed consent laws requiring that women receiving abortions be given certain information. See, the abortion regulators have passed certain rules on how to kill children. And the Satanists, they're upset with the rules. Because they just, well, wait a second now. They don't want to kill anyone, right? They say they have compassion towards all creatures and respect for others' freedom. Well, I guess that doesn't count for the innocent, defenseless, voiceless child in the womb who they choose to kill so they can go get another tattoo, get another piercing without having to wait the 9 months of gestation it takes to do the right thing and just have the kid and stop being such a child. They do plan to volunteer at a local animal shelter. At multiple animal shelters, as a matter of fact. Because they're good people. They love animals. Hitler loved dogs. Did you know that? He loved dogs. Absolutely. Now, he butchered people by the millions. But he loved dogs. And the Satanists, they love dogs, and apparently they hate babies. And they like the queers. So there you have it. They're setting up. There's a picture attached to this article with the obligatory dark eyeshadow, black fingernails, pale skin, upside down cross. That whole scene. That was their spokes. I couldn't actually tell if it was a boy or a girl. Its name is Jex, J-E-X. Jex Blackmore is the 32-year-old local leader, part of the temple's executive ministry there. And you can just Google Detroit Satanic Temple and you'll get a get a look at Jackson. He, she, it is certainly everything you'd expect. Okay. Now, we're going deeper into the bad religion file. Is that possible? I mean, we've just come from Satanism. You can't get any worse than that, can you? Actually, you can get worse than Satan himself or a satanic temple. We're going to go to a Christian pop singer for the bad religion file. This is reported from WorldNet Daily. Michael Gungor. He's the lead singer of a group called Gungor. If your last name is Gungor and you start a band, I would advise you don't name your band Gungor. Just because Gungor sounds odd. Maybe it's pronounced differently, but I never heard of this fella. But he is a Grammy-nominated worship band leader whose hits include Beautiful Things, Say So, and Dry Bones. Ring a bell? Not even. I'm not even getting a glisten of any recognition out of the eyes of my extremely attractive audio engineer. She has no idea. So we've never heard of Gungor, but apparently he's Grammy-nominated, him and the rest of his band. And they're being criticized by the head of Answers in Genesis, because that's Ken Ham. He's criticizing Gungor because he suggested that Jesus may have been wrong about the creation story, or possibly Jesus just lied about it so he could fit in with the popular culture. You know, like the whole Genesis creation thing, he knew that was something that people believed in. And so he just kind of went along. Jesus went along to get along type of thing. So Michael Gungor says, quote, "Well, even if Jesus was wrong, even if he did believe that Noah was a historical person or that Adam was like a historical person and then Jesus ended up being wrong, well, I don't understand how that even would deny the divinity of Christ, like anything like that. I mean, it wouldn't freak me out if he was wrong about it. If, like, Noah and Adam were mythical ideas. You know, the point of what Jesus was saying still applies, man. I mean, even if Jesus knew that Noah and Adam were mythical, he was talking to people who thought they were real." Unquote. That's a Grammy-nominated Christian entertainer of some sort. Just blaspheming on his way straight to hell with jet rockets. Well, I guess I shouldn't say he's on his way straight to hell with jet rockets. But I suppose I will, and I'll just leave it at that. Not going to be picking up any Gungor albums in the near future. Certainly not. All right, let's set that aside. And now we're going to go even further down into the bad religion file. This is the worst place to be in the bad religion file. Under a pile of homos. Yes. The St. Patrick's Day Parade. As reported by the New York Post, organizers for the St. Patty's Day Parade in New York City have capitulated to the homosexuals. They have ended their ban on homosexuals marching openly, loudly, and flamingly in the St. Patty's Day Parade. Yeah, that's right. The group that has apparently achieved the first invite to march alongside the normal people is a group called Out at NBC Universal. It's a lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender affinity group headquartered at 30 Rockefeller Center. They're the ones who write all the skits for Saturday Night Live, Out at NBC Universal. Well, they're going to be flying their banner and marching up Fifth Avenue on March 17th with all the normal people dressed in green. And other LGBT groups apparently can now apply to march in future years, but there's only going to be one pile of queers that will be seething and moving up the street there at this year's, well, I guess it'd be next year's parade. The organizing committee said that this move was made in order to, quote, change the tone and expand inclusiveness. And it's a gesture of goodwill to the LGBT community in our continuing effort to keep the parade above politics. Excuse me. Letting the homosexuals march in your parade is drenching it in politics. It's surrendering to politics. It's disgusting. Not to mention that it's immoral and just sick to have people marching down the street shouting out about how they well, I can't even get into what they do, for crying out loud. We have a quote, I believe, if I can find it, from the diversity officer, vice president, executive vice president, and chief diversity officer. See, diversity officer, it's not a full-time gig. But his name is Craig. And Craig says, "We welcome the parade committee's decision to accept out at NBC Universal's application to march and enthusiastically embrace the gesture of inclusion. Our employees, families, and friends look forward to joining this time-honored celebration of Irish culture and heritage." Unquote. Irish culture and heritage? Let's see. Organized insisted that while they are allowing the homos to march, they are remaining loyal to church teachings. It's a Catholic parade, you know. And I suppose if you think about some of the traditions in the Catholic Church, well, some of the practices anyway, they are staying loyal to, but certainly not to the teaching of the church.
You look like an angel.
Look like an angel.
Walk like an angel.
Walk like an angel.
Talk like an angel.
But I got
mine. You're the devil in the sky. Oh, yes, you are. The devil in the sky.
It's the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you so much for being aboard this week. Some going back to some classics there, huh? All right. I haven't heard that. My mama had every album Elvis ever released. And starting at about the age of four, I listened to all of them. Big Elvis fan. I remember the day he died, and I was only, I would have been, let's do the math. We got to carry the three there. I was nine when Elvis died, and it was devastating. Devastating. Anyway, thank you, Elvis. We appreciate that contribution. We send in a royalty to the estate there at Graceland. Now, into the culture file, I've got a report from CNS News, a fine news source, by the way, CNS News, actually conservative, I do believe, as far as I can tell. They're reporting that if you count a generation as spanning 20 years, then approximately 36% of the American generation born between 93 and 2012, when they've just begun turning 21 this year, they were born to unmarried mothers. 36% of that slice of America were born to unmarried mothers. Just to give you an idea of how far we've come. You've come a long way, baby. In 1940, about 4% of American babies were born to unmarried mothers. By 1960, 20 years later, a generation later, if you want to count it this way, which is fine, from 1940 to 1960, there was an increase in illegitimate births. It went from 4% to 5% over that 20-year period. Now, it exploded after that because from 1960 to 1983, that 20-year, 23-year slice, it rose above 20%. By 92, it was 30%. By 08, it was 40%. Are we noticing a pattern here? So as soon as the sexual liberation movement and all of that and the pill and, of course, abortion on demand, so what do you expect? You have people engaging in activity that should be limited to one man and one woman within the boundaries of a marriage as God intended it to be. So we don't have that, and so now we have, for crying out loud, almost half the babies are illegitimate now. 40% in 2008, that's bizarre. That's incredible. It was over 40% in 2009, went to 41 in 2010. It's starting to slow down because you can only have so many illegitimate kids. I mean, you can only have so many. Sandra Fluck can only have sex with so many people. I mean, I don't mean Sandra Fluck herself, but I mean people like her. People of her ilk. People of her... people in her habits, people who practice the thing. Okay, so now you can tell. This is where I need some blood in my brain. Yeah. Well, I will march forward here if you can just bear with me. That is stunning, shocking data. Half our kids being, it's just unbelievable. Well, it's not unbelievable. In fact, it's completely predictable, but it is sad to think of all those young kids growing up without their father and with their mother obviously otherwise engaged because she probably has to make a living or go out and try to land another guy. So she's out bar hopping and trolling and cruising and all that. She can't focus on the child's education. It's so sad. It's so sad what we've done to the children that America has allowed to live, which is only about two-thirds of them in the past couple generations. Only about two-thirds of the kids have been allowed to live. A third of them have been killed, murdered. And then the ones that we've allowed to live, we're not serving well at all. It's just sad. But we have to march on into the politics file. We have a report from Breitbart on politics, as you can well imagine. It's their big government page, specializes in politics. And this is another generational type story. Americans aged 18 to 24, more than half of Americans age 18 to 24 feel that everyone who participates in a sport should get a trophy. Yeah, that's right. Now don't jump off the bridge yet. Among all Americans, almost 60% think only the winning player should receive a trophy, but the younger generation, well, they all got trophies and they think it's just fine. 66% of Republicans want only the kids who win to receive trophies. 66% of Republicans say only the winner should get a trophy. 31% say that all kids should get a trophy, proving one-third of any group of people are complete idiots and liberals and just vacuous, amoral, immoral morons. You just throw out a net and you scoop up any group of people from anywhere and a third of them are going to be complete idiots. Now, amongst Democrats, it's worse, as you can well imagine. Democrats are evenly divided about 50-50. Yeah, that just proves that half of all Democrats are outright flaming homosexual communists. The other half are just dangerous, dangerously ignorant. And maybe malevolent. Even that 50%, the Democrat Party. How can anybody be associated with that party anymore? I mean, aren't you afraid of fire actually coming down and just consuming you or the earth opening up and just sucking you down into hell? Register as a Democrat. It's unbelievable. All right. So there you have it. Half the kids think everybody should get a trophy. The youngsters, that is. The millennials, they call them. So there you have that. All right, now we'll move on down the path of the Queering of America file. I said queering, Q-U-E-E-R-I-N-G, queering, the Queering of America file. Just want to be clear about what we're talking about. We're going to go to Columbia, South Carolina. A 16-year-old there has sued the state's Department of Motor Vehicles because the DMV won't allow the teen to take a driver's license photo wearing makeup. And it's not that her dad or mom object and they say she's too young, she shouldn't wear makeup. It's that she's a boy. I mean, he's a boy. The person who wants to take the photo with the makeup is a boy, is what I'm trying to say. His name is Chase. And according to this article from the Post and Courier there in Columbia, South Carolina, Chase regularly wears makeup and women's clothing. And Chase is 16 years old and he just got his driver's license, and he's offended. They told him you can't. They said makeup on a man is considered a disguise. It'd be altering your appearance. We can't let you do that. We have standards here. I mean, we might be the DMV, okay? But we have some standards, please. Well, Chase told reporters that being ordered by officials to remove what they called a disguise was degrading. It was degrading. I left the DMV feeling so humiliated. I wanted to be myself and have a driver's license photo that reflects that. Degraded. I mean, guy's walking around in makeup and women's clothing. He claims he's degraded. How can you be degraded any further than that, you freak? He's obviously mentally ill. And lawyers, in fact, a bunch of lawyers want to help him be more mentally ill. A group of New York lawyers known as the Transgender Legal Defense and Teen Boy Cruising Fund. I'm sorry, did I say Teen Boy Cruising Fund? I meant the Transgender Legal Defense and Education Fund. Sorry about that. They wrote to the DMV officials there in South Carolina, and they demanded that Chase be allowed to have a new photo taken. In fact, they said they want him to be able to dress like he dresses every day, put his makeup on, throw his bra and blouse on. Well, the DMV said no. They said, you're not going to be allowed to be photographed when it appears that you're purposely altering your appearance. We're just not going to do that. We don't roll that way here. This is South Carolina. This is not the Castro District. This isn't Greenwich Village. This isn't Austin, Texas, for crying out loud. Columbia, South Carolina. The policy that's in effect there in the Carolinas, I believe it's a pan-Carolina rule, lets DMV, according to the lawyers, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have ate that steak, I tell you what. According to the Teen Boy Cruising Club, the New York Transgender Legal Defense and Education Fund, they say the policy lets DMV employees arbitrarily decide how men and women need to look. Arbitrarily? I mean, we got like 5,000 years of recorded history. Is it really considered arbitrary? I mean, please. So they don't like that. They say Chase should be allowed to get a driver's license without being subjected to sex discrimination. He should also be allowed to ride home with me, said the lead lawyer. Anyway. So that's the further queering of America. Another young man, mentally ill, being abused by queer lawyers out of New York, which is about what queer lawyers are good for. Destroying the country and ruining young men's lives. That's what they're good for. And they're trying to ruin Chase's life by dragging him into their nightmarish existence of homosexuality and utter rebellion. And so there. Now we got to move into the domestic tranquility file because this story actually is related to the previous story. According to CNN, every 40 seconds someone in the world kills himself. There's 800,000 suicides a year worldwide. Recent research indicates that, as CNN reports it, suicide killed more people each year than conflicts and natural catastrophes, accounting for more than half of the world's 1.5 million violent deaths annually. I just want to point out to CNN that suicide didn't kill the people. I mean, they killed themselves. What they did is called suicide. But suicide isn't some mad killer running around killing people. Suicide. I think it's a verb. Is it a verb? I don't want to embarrass myself with grammar. I think suicide's a verb. I don't think you can be killed by a verb. I mean, suicide could be a noun. The death was ruled a suicide. But he committed suicide. Anyway, I don't want to get into a whole grammatical thing, but suicide doesn't kill people. It's just an analysis after the fact. Now, the World Health Organization. Did I almost say the World Whore Organization? I almost said that. I apologize. That's a Freudian. It's the World Health Organization. And they have stepped up and they've created an unagency. Yeah, that's what they do at the UN. They create unagencies and unorganizations. They have unmissions, uneducation funds. Anyway, they've started a bureaucracy to study and reduce suicide. Their goal is to cut national suicide rates 10% by 2020. Yeah, that's pretty lofty, huh? Yeah, Dr. Margaret Chan is the Director General of the World Health Organization, and she said in a statement, "This report is a call for action to address a large public health problem which has been shrouded in taboo for far too long." So Margaret Chan thinks that maybe if we just talk about it more and stop making suicide such a taboo, less people will do it. So she's obviously mentally deranged, and she lives in... She lives in an alternate universe where up is down, left is right, black is white, and removing taboos reduces the incidence of behaviors once considered taboo. So she, obviously she's perfectly qualified to head an un-agency coming from the alternate un-world that she does. Let's see here. The most common method of suicide globally is pesticide poisoning. I know. I would have thought the bullet to the head, but that's third place. Number two is hanging. But the number one method is pesticide poisoning. Evidence had shown that restricting access... you can't make this up. Restricting access to pesticides, rope, and firearms could help reduce the number of deaths. He's walking that tightrope. All right. Tell it. Oh, man. I could just let it roll, but you got to turn it off. Tell it, Stevie. All right. All right. Now, yeah. Thank you, Stevie. We appreciate that. We will move now. We're out of the bad religion file. That was the domestic tranquility file, the queering of America. Now we're in the religion file. Just religion. We're going to go to the Robertsons of Duck Dynasty fame. Mia Robertson is now 10 years old. Her parents learned that she had a cleft lip and possible cleft palate 31 weeks into the pregnancy through a 4D ultrasound. So Mia was delivered at 37 weeks, and she was disabled. She's had a number of surgeries, including a bone graft, to repair the damage of the cleft lip, cleft palate. And Mia and her mom, well, maybe it was just Mia. No, it was Mia and Missy Robinson and Jace Robinson. They all appeared at a Capitol Hill press conference last week, sponsored by Representative Trent Franks out of Arizona. And Missy Robertson took a question from a person in the crowd who asked her, was there ever a thought in your mind that you might not follow through with the pregnancy? Now, that's kind of a coy couched question, you know, to avoid saying, did you ever think of just killing it? Did you ever think maybe just kill it? When you found out she was sick, did you think about killing her? But no, did you ever think we might not follow through with the prayer? Well, anyway, Missy said, absolutely not, no. The thought never entered my mind. God gave each and every one of us a life. It's a gift. And Mia is a special person. Oh, that's awesome. And mom said, who am I to decide that for her? You know? And I applaud her for that. But then Missy Robertson said, well, God already decided that and allowed that to happen. And see, that's why it's not in the bad religion file. It's not in the good religion file. This is in the average state of religion file. Something bad happens. People say, well, it's the will of God. Well, God doesn't will that any kid has a cleft lip or cleft palate, Missy. And we're really glad that you didn't kill your baby. You know, that makes you, I guess, qualify as a civilized human being. But to attribute the disability of your child to the living God is, I wouldn't say it's blasphemous, but it's just distasteful. And it's insulting. And let's just let Missy go. Missy says, I'm grateful for Mia as a human being. I can't imagine life without her. That's awesome. Okay, she's a decent human being. But she thinks that God gave her child a cleft palate for some reason. Anyway, Jace says, quote, he says that he and his wife had not, quote, spent a lot of time asking God why Mia was born with her difficulties. We have accepted it. as another opportunity to glorify him. And so now Jace is half right here. It is, everything's an opportunity to glorify God. You have a kid, whether they're disabled or whether they're the head of the chess club. I mean, either way, they can glorify God, and parents can glorify. But for Jace to say, he says he didn't spend a lot of time asking God why Mia was born that way. So he understands that God wanted her born that way, but he decided not to ask a lot of questions about it. Anyway, I should sit down with the Robertsons and just talk to them and help them out a little bit. But hey, what are you going to do? Well, that's my impression of their uncle, the weird one. No doubt. What does he say? Something like that. I can't remember. We kind of stopped watching that show a while back, but that's awesome. That they stood up in front of Congress and said you shouldn't kill a baby because she's disabled. That's the best you can hope for these days, right? Someone stands up and says, well, let's not kill babies. Yeah, well, I mean, that's not a very high bar, but, you know, we'll take what we can get. Now we'll move into the politics file. This is from the Personhood Department. Democrat Bruce Braley, he's running for the U.S. Senate there in Iowa. He's running a new TV ad criticizing his Republican opponent, Joni Ernst, because she sponsored the Personhood Amendment in Iowa in the past. So taking a page out of the playbook of the Colorado Senate race between Mark Udall and some other guy, Cory Gardner. Yeah. Oh, Udall's got a lot of mileage out of that. So now this Democrat, Bruce Braley, he's going to have nonstop ads criticizing Joni Ernst's support of personhood. And the article from the Des Moines Register says that critics of personhood, including the American Congress of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. Can I try that again? The American Congress of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. They're critics of personhood. They say the measure would ban abortion, even in cases of rape and incest. And it would even prohibit the use of common contraceptives like birth control pills and intrauterine devices. Women are going to die. There'll be blood in the streets. It'll be terrible. We'll all be slaves. Well, that's what the Braley ad says. I mean, words to that effect. I might have been a little bit more dramatic, but after the ad's release, this new TV ad, Ernst criticized Braley, so that the Republican conservative woman who supported personhood, Ernst, she criticized Braley. She says he's running one of the most negative campaigns in Iowa I've ever seen, and I support access to birth control. I'm for birth control. What's the deal with Republicans groveling, cowering, and weeping, and basically offering to buy birth control pills for people if we could just convince them that we're pro-birth control? You criticize someone for saying we shouldn't kill babies and that we shouldn't allow abortifacient devices like the intrauterine device and certain types of abortifacient pills. And what's the first thing the Republicans start screaming about? I'm for birth control. I love birth control. Everybody should be on birth control. My daughter's only 11 and she's on birth control. If I could put my son on birth control, I'd put him on. I love it. It's just embarrassing. Just stand up and say, look, personhood doesn't have anything to do with birth control, but if you've got a pill or a device that actually prevents the implantation of a human being, that's not birth control. That's abortion. That's murder. Just stand up and say it. But what does she end with? Ernst, this is the conservative, Republican, pro-life position now. She says, quote, I will always protect women's access to birth control. I always have and I always will. I promise. Just great. So that's where the argument drags us down to when we compromise. You end up arguing for things that are... birth control, I'm sorry, folks. It's a bad idea. It's a bad idea to give it to your kids. It's a bad idea that it's available. It's a bad idea to choke off the next generation, you idiots. And she's the Republican. Now, Wendy Davis, on the other hand, I've got a report here from Breitbart. She's running down in Texas as a Democrat. And she has a new book. And in her new book, she talks about the abortion she's had. During her second trimester, Davis said, she took a blood test that could determine chromosomal or neural defects. So the first question I'd have is, what are you doing that for, Wendy? What are you taking a blood test to find out if your baby might have a birth defect? First of all, what are you doing that for? So right there, I think you're a lousy person, right there. The fact that you would do that you would even have that test, tells me that you're not a good person, Wendy. So she took the test. Lo and behold, the test showed some abnormalities. In fact, she says the test revealed a brain defect. Oh, it was awful. It was horrible. The doctors, she went and sought the opinions from multiple doctors. And what did the multiple doctors allegedly tell her? Well, they told her the baby would be deaf, blind, and in a permanent vegetative state if the baby could even survive delivery. That's allegedly what Wendy was told. Now, how does a doctor predict that your child's going to be deaf or blind or in a vegetative state? I have no idea. I mean, they can give you their opinion that that could happen. They could give you their opinion that it's a possibility, especially after you went and got this diabolical test. You evil witch going and getting a test like that. Anyway, so she swears up and down the doctors told her, oh, if the baby even survives, it'll just be horrible. Listen to what Wendy Davis says. I could feel her little body tremble violently as if someone were applying an electric shock to her. And I knew then what I needed to do. She was suffering. Oh.
So I killed her. I killed her, that's right. Yeah, I knew what I had to do, yeah. Killed her.
Planned Parenthood President Cecile Richards, who's the daughter of former Texas Governor Ann Richards. I did not know that. But now, the same clenched jaw, the same bulging blood vessel, when they talk about babies being born alive, you know, they grit their teeth and you can see the platysmal bands in their necks and they just like talk about babies. But, I mean, now I see it. Ann Richards and Cecile. Yes. Okay, but anyway, Cecile Richards, president of Planned Parenthood, said in a statement that she was grateful for Davis sharing her story,
although no woman should ever have to justify her decision. It's her decision, damn it. Yeah.
Excuse me. I was possessed by the spirit of Ann Richards there for a minute. Is she still alive, Ann Richards? Is Cecile Richards still alive? Or is she animated by the beast? Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for tuning in once again. Turn up that flanger. Oh, we missed a flanger. My favorite part. Love a flanger. Love a good flange. Right? All right. Wendy Davis, Cecile Richards on their way straight to hell with jet rockets. And in the meantime, we move to Rockvale. And I'm not sure where Rockvale is. It's near Murfreesboro, so I think it's got to be Tennessee, right? Murfreesboro? Anyway, Rockvale Elementary principal is in the news this past week with reason number 804 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Detectives from the Vice Unit observed Rockvale Elementary School principal Donnie Johnson at a location where he used an ATM to receive cash. He then moved into a known drug-dealing location. He met a drug seller, Takista Robinson, in the parking lot, and a hand-to-hand transaction took place. That's right, it was cash for crack cocaine for the elementary school principal there in Rockvale, Tennessee. The principal, let's see, he's been charged with one count of simple possession and casual exchange for good measure. He was released from jail on a $1,000 bond. I thought this was a guy the whole time. Well, how often does a female principal go out and buy crack cocaine for? I'm sorry. Donnie Johnson. Well, it's a girl. Maybe it's a transvestite. I don't know anymore. Who could? I mean, when you got elementary school principals buying crack cocaine, I mean, anything goes for crying out loud. Turns out Donnie's a girl. She faces a felony count. Oh, no, wait a second. Robinson, oh, boy. Takista is a girl. Now, how would you have known that? The dealer was a girl. I should have known because the name was Takista. Takista Robinson. All right. So Donnie Johnson, it turns out he was a boy. Unless he's transgendered and we don't want to offend him if he is. And we'll call him a... Maybe we'll just leave it to an androgynous... Leave it to your androgynous imagination as to what the elementary principle is. But he was buying, he or she or it was buying crack cocaine from Takista Robinson, and that does qualify. As reason number 804 to get or keep your children out of the government schools, Takista faces a felony possession count of a Schedule II drug. She's out of jail as well. No news as to whether or not the elementary school principal has been put on administrative leave. I meant paid administrative leave. Apparently was not allowed to smoke his crack. That's the only, yeah. I think they take the crack away before they throw you in jail. All right, now, on to the war file. As if domestic policy wasn't depressing enough, President Obama was asked at the recent NATO meeting there in England, I think it was, Wales. Is that England? Does that qualify? Wales. Anyway, he was asked to what's the purpose of NATO? His teleprompter was off, and he just looked dead. He looked deadpan into the camera. He had no idea what to say. But then his teleprompter came up. By the way, did you see his interview with Chuck Todd on the new Meet the Press this past Sunday? Hey, go back and look at the tape. Tell me Barry didn't have a teleprompter somewhere below him and off to the side a little bit. I mean, I could actually see his eyes reading as he pretended to look down and be thoughtful. He was actually reading from a teleprompter. I'm convinced of it. I saw the one of the most bizarre interviews I've ever seen. It was as if there was a cinematographer and a director and everybody just off stage kind of making everything. And then it was so heavily edited as to be theater. It was theater. It might as well have been a movie. It was just bizarre. But I digress. I need to get back. Barry says that NATO, he was asked, what is the purpose of NATO? And once someone turned on his teleprompter, he described NATO as unique in the annals of history. We have to recognize that threats evolve, and threats have evolved as a consequence of what we've seen in Ukraine. But threats are also evolving in the Middle East that have a direct effect on Europe. At which point, everybody looked at each other and said, what did he just say? Was he hanging out with the principal from Darren, Tennessee? What was he smoking? What was he smoking? Nobody could understand what he said. But so he went on to add that the international community needs to have an international will, which maybe they're all planning to commit suicide, and he's encouraging them to write up a will. And well, that would probably be the best news we've heard if the international community, as represented by the United Nations and prime ministers and Barry Obama, if they all just agreed to a collective political suicide pact and they all went over the cliff together. And I agree, they should have an international will if that's what they decide to do. He says, quote, we know that if we are joined by the international community, we will continue to shrink ISIL to where it is a manageable problem. Manageable, yes. What we've got to do is make sure that we are organizing the Arab world, the Middle East, and the Muslim world, along with the international community, to isolate this cancer, he said. At which point people were like, which cancer? I mean, you know, pick one, Barry. You look a bit metastatic yourself. as a matter of fact. So Barry wants to organize the Arab world to control the Muslim fanatics. And if that's his strategy, I would rather go with not having a strategy, Barry. I think no strategy is probably better. He says, we've got to combat ISIL in a sustained and effective way. Never says we will fight or we will win or we will destroy them or we will eliminate any remnant of anything that lets anyone know that they ever even existed, which is what must be done. But he never says we'll fight or we'll win or we'll have victory or anything like that. And, well, that's just depressing. That's the war file. What do you expect? But we'll move on. Deeper into the war file. I wasn't sure if I want to do this story because maybe I won't, actually. I'm going to leave this aside because... Anyway, it was about the family whose son... You know, the American journalist who was the latest one who was beheaded? His family came out and made a statement, and you know what? Because he got his head cut off, I'm not going to comment on it because I don't know what I would say. All right. Did you catch Fox over the weekend with the 13 hours at Benghazi? Pretty compelling stuff. I mean, really. There's three guys who were on the ground. And these were, according to this Fox News report, there were three security operators at the secret CIA annex in Benghazi. And they presented a vivid, compelling narrative of events from the perspective of the men who actually wore those boots on the ground that you hear about. These were six boots on the ground. One of them got his arm blown off. Well, they reattached it, but it doesn't work so well. Anyway, this guy's a hero. These guys are heroes. They were shooting bad guys. When asked by Brett Baer, was help delayed? They said the team was held back. They said they were delayed from responding to the attack by a top CIA officer in Benghazi, whom they refer to only as Bob. And one of the operators said, Bob just looked straight at me and he says, stand down, you need to wait. So there's the words right there, stand down. Yeah, Barry and the four horsewomen of the apocalypse. Who is it? Can we name them? Newland? I can't name them. It's because I had that big steak. I can't remember all their names. Valerie Jarrett is one of them. Victoria Newland. Maybe Barry's mother-in-law. We don't know how much power she has, but she could be riding one of those horses. And then the other one, Cass Sunstein's wife. Unless that's one of the... Anyway. One of them, someone said, stand down. And Bob was on the phone with somebody that these guys don't know who Bob was on the phone with. And apparently they're less than anxious to actually identify Bob. But when it all comes out in the wash, we find out who was Bob on the phone with. I guess that's the next step. We'll probably find out sometime after Elizabeth Warren takes the oath of office. In 2016. And meanwhile, in the politics file from CNS News again, excellent conservative news source, they say that ICE, what does ICE stand for? I can't remember. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. It's a new bureaucracy created by George W. Bush, whose initial response to 9/11 was to spend about $1 trillion. Setting up new bureaucracies, consolidating, expanding, growing. We went to the Homeland Security. We have ICE now. We have the bozos at the airport with the wands and the X-ray vision. Anyway, ICE. They say that they have released 169 illegal aliens convicted of what they classify as quote. Homicide-related crimes. I didn't make that up. Only in a triple-layer bureaucracy, like the one created by George W. Bush over at ICE, only there could they come up with a term like homicide-related crimes. See, in the past, that was just called murder. But no longer. There's so many different ways, you know, that one can participate, I suppose. And if you're a very creative bureaucrat and your job is to classify things, well, pretty soon you end up with 15 or 16 different homicide-related offenses so that you can busy yourself putting the various offenses in the various slots and in the various folders and files so that you can make a report at the end of the week to your boss and collect a bonus. So they've released 169. Well, that phone should never ring. Yeah, this could be an emergency. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll call you back. I had to hang up the phone. That's never supposed to happen. Wow. Now, where was I? Oh, homicide-related offenses. So ICE says that 169 detainees had been convicted of homicide-related offenses, and those are just the ones they released into the American public. The mall down the street. The library across town. The local skate park. The swimming pool. That's where these people who committed the homicide-related offenses have been released into, and so there you have it. That's your bureaucracy at work releasing homicide-related murderers, not to put too fine a point on it. But all right. Meanwhile, in the domestic tranquility file, reporters rushed to the scene to report on the opening of I-280 in San Francisco, a big event. They've been working on the I-280 road there in San Francisco for quite some time. Reporters arrived on the scene last Tuesday, and they were robbed at gunpoint by men wearing bandanas over their face. They looked like ISIS guys with the bandanas. Yeah, or the guys who took over the square there in Kiev before they toppled the government there in Ukraine, you know, with the bandanas. Anyway, the camera crew was robbed at gunpoint, and this is just the latest robbery involving members of the media in the Bay Area. Some TV stations have started hiring security guards to ride around. It's like reporting in San Francisco is like being in Benghazi. You need some special forces operators. Robbed right there at gunpoint, for crying out loud. Okay, finally, we go to Colorado. Colorado is missing over $20 million in marijuana taxes because it just hasn't been collected. Yeah, the government predicted that they would pull in about $35 million in taxes. Well, they haven't quite done that. They're missing $21 million, even though retail marijuana is taxed at nearly 30%. Lawmakers, they say, may have been too optimistic in their revenue forecasts, begging the obvious question from earlier in the program, what were they smoking? All right, I guess that was too obvious. All right, I'm sorry. Sometimes you go for the cheap joke because it's the end of the show and you're just looking for a way to get out. That's all we've got for this week, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank my friends at KGOV, at Denver Bible Church, at Theology Online, and at AmericanRightToLife.com. And as always, I want to thank my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. Should the Lord tarry, I will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.